Good evening. It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and we're continuing our study of The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. we've studied a number of his works over the last few years, in this format, where we're online, where it's available to everybody in different time zones and things like this. And for me, we've worked our way to a point where I believe that The Hidden Work is really the third part of the trilogy. That's how it's working out for me, because whereas The Human Biological Machine is the first one, Life in the Labyrinth is the second, and now it's The Hidden Work, or how do you actually live in the between states area. And that's what we want to work with tonight. I don't know if you had a chance to go to the website and see wingsofchaos.com. There's a fine summary that was put up there by Jim H., and I'm not sure if he's there tonight, and also Ian Watson, who's in England right now, and most likely will not be joining us. Comes on as Godfrey, but I think it's 3 a.m. or something like that. So he's getting his goodie by. But it's a fine piece of work that they did back and forth over the last few weeks. This is a very, very, very short chapter, but we'll spend about 2 weeks on it. Also, if you had a chance to go on the website, you'll notice that the summary I put up, in addition to the header, which Ivan will read in a few minutes, I put up a series of quotes about prayer. And if we can suspend our judgments for a while about prayer and what it means, those of us who are Catholic or Jewish or Lutheran that came from heavy traditions, prayer carries a very dogmatic meaning that it carries with it. Prayer means this. It usually means prayer means you do this. Well, we're not in that form, that type of work. We're not doing the type of work that in the monastic work that you find in the Greek Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox Church, or the great monks and nuns of the 15th century Spain, 16th century Spain, and they did have a type of prayer that they worked with. And their prayer was designed very much for what they were doing, which is work, critical work, in an hermetic institution. They left the world, and they did that specifically to create a format and information and to grab information that was in the higher spheres that they worked with and made those available to us. And I don't know if Aria is on, but she could attest to the idea of some of that material that was brought forth by St. Teresa of Avila. And I have to mention this, but she was a nun and she led her, she was the mother superior of her order. Mm-hmm. But as it was at the time, they had a confessor, and the confessor was a male priest. Do you happen to know who her confessor was? No? St. John of the Cross. So, who was another enormous luminary in the history of Christian mysticism with his Dark Night of the Soul. And he gave a verbiage to a process that all the Christian mystics go through, or all the mystics probably go through. But also, if you go east, then you see in the Hindu tradition, you have the work with mantras, where they work with mantras, or the wonderful, kirtans.
Kirtans.
The remarkable, that's a form of prayer but it's a form that takes shape in that tradition in the manner with Deva Pramal, and as a wonderful example of that in, as a modern singer. Or you're given a particular mantra to work with. And then you go further, some of the Tibetan Buddhists, and they chant the whole sutra, various prayers from the sutra. Mm-hmm. Then if you continue further, then you get down to, you get to Japan, and you get to the Roshis in the, they give you the koan, and you work with that. That was a kind of a form of it. And then, of course, with the Zazen meditation, it's, as George said earlier, it's no mind. And so you're just contemplating in that, like the Theravada and Buddhists, where you're watching the rising and falling of your breath. And so those are all forms of it. But here we are, we're not that. We're saying that we are fourth way voyagers, right? Mm-hmm. We are in the world, but not of it. So what then is the fourth way voyager left with? And that's part of what our investigation is this evening, is what is before us and what's possible. And we've had some great work that was done in Chapter 10, and Dan and Arya and others put a lot into that work. And we stand on each chapter as we go forward, and now we're really at a critical point. So, and without further ado, and Susan, are you on tonight? So Dan, Susan, I don't think Susan's able to get on the phone this evening. Okay, so why don't you raise your hand if there's a question or a comment that somebody would like to make, okay? And we're going to do a little experiment in about 20 minutes or so with the just the participants in the room this evening. But, so we're on Chapter 11. And do you want to get us started, Ivan, in the header there?
The method of prayer absolute. Prayer absolute requires a very definite sequence of contemplations. Concentrations of attention intentionally aroused simultaneously in each of the lower centrums.
So to even get to this point where we can begin to discuss the idea of a prayer absolute, we are already resting on a lot of information that we've already worked with. And where we work with holding a particular type of presence, like for instance, in the last chapter we talked about being able to be open to a particular kind of presence and to allow the invocation to begin then. And so we're talking about a particular kind of invocation, correct?
Right.
We're saying, how do we begin to work with this kind of invocation? And I'm going to explode this chapter a little bit because I'm going to say, yes, here's what we can do at home in a sense, but I want to take it on the road also. Mm-hmm. I want to take it on the road. Now, what I'm going to do first is I'm going to jump to the actual prayer itself, or the, I'm not sure if it's referred to as a prayer, on page, a few years ago I didn't have to wait to put on those glasses, and this is page 113. So, this, we're going to, We work as a group here. Each of us is in an individual position. Here in the room tonight, there are four of us. But and Dan, how many online are there? So there's 27 also online viewing, logged in, or not, but are watching. All of us make the receptacle for the invocation, right? It is those together. So George is up there, and somewhere, and he's sitting there. Right now, he most likely is physically, in a sense, by himself. Susan, I don't even think, is logged in tonight, but she is aware of the class and is partly with us. And the same goes for Hawk Lady and Aria and Jim H. and Ian, who may not be on at all. They're in part with us. And how does that work? How does it work that we're together? And the formula for that is that we're sharing common intention and attention. We come together with that in mind, okay? So the reason I'm waiting just a bit to actually read this is because these are the words that open up a particular door, and we're about to go through that door together. Everybody that's here, including Shakti, will all go through this door together. And the way we're going to do it, we're going to use these following words as a transport mechanism. Then we're going to come back and study those a little bit. But for starters, we're going to use this opener to get to open the door to where we're going to go. And so let's take a moment and just begin. And in a sense, maybe it'd be okay if you just listened rather than read along. So try to just listen. But listen, make it a whole body listening. Listen with all your centrums, as alive as they can be at the moment. So let's give it a shot and let's see how it goes. So let's begin. And in motion, bowing, my presence comes to thee. Humbly, with heart alive, my presence awakens to thee. With clear mind, my presence comes to know thee. With pity for thy suffering, my presence becomes aware of thee. With yearning, my presence wishes to comfort thee. In ignorance, my presence serves thee. In contemplation, my presence recognizes how to serve thee. In mystery, my presence is a comfort to thee. In form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee. That particular prayer, I call it a prayer, has 9 lines to it. And I'd like to ask everybody, I'll start with the folks in the room while you're gathering your thoughts, is that each of those 9 lines has a particular slant to it. And did one or the other reach out to you as they were being read? I'll go first. I've read this many, 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 many times. So for me, I was moved, I'm always moved by the 5th one, which is, with yearning, my presence wishes to comfort thee. It just always grabs me. It's like, that's the tool that is used by this one to ascend in a particular manner. So along those same lines, Ivan, was there any of those that particularly stood out, or was it just a general?
Well, I've read this a number of times also, but not recently. I would say that in listening to it just now, this contemplation of yearning, you know, is the most striking to me because it expresses a work wish.
Yes.
You know, that I could feel that in ignorance my presence serves thee is rather, you know, to me that's rather mysterious. You know, I'm not sure that I get that.
I get it. But
in contemplation and in mystery, but anyway.
So for you also is the feeling of yearning.
Yeah, well, I think that these first, just like in the early chapter, which they went over in the summary, you know, the contemplations, it's, you know, like I feel like I can identify the vibrations of the heart, you know, the opening lines, the moving center, you know, the heart, the mind, the clear mind, and then the emotions, the pity for thy suffering. So all of that is sort of summed up in yearning. And to me, after that, it's going into the
right.
Higher vibration. It's the higher centrums to approach the mystery, the actual experience of the man on the cross. Difficult.
Jana? Jana's pointing out that for her, the first one for her was in motion bowing, my presence comes to thee. She, that was like a trigger for her. But then she was keyed into a very unusual phrasing that has always caught me, with pity for thy suffering. And listen to the next phrase, my presence then becomes aware of thee. It's like when we can see that, when we can begin to see the very edges of this sense of suffering, whatever it may be, there's no need to define it here. And then I become aware of you.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to know why, but it works in us, she says. So, and then also for her yearning. And Dan, anything strike you or? For him, the first three were actually as if it was building up, whatever it means at the moment. Increasing presence. So Dan saying for him, it was the one in ignorance. In ignorance, my presence serves thee. And yeah, I don't get that. I don't understand that. But may I serve anyway. So there's a movement to serve in spite of having to know why. Okay? So I was wondering if anybody else put down what struck them or how it struck them, and we'll take the time to read it just because it's so rich. It's really rich to hear this. Yeah, Hawk Lady. But of course, Hawk Lady says that for her, in form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee. That's scary. So, Jim H., it was pity, yearning, and then becomes thee, right?
Yeah.
Nice. Unbelievable. And so Arya, of course, with heart alive, my presence awakens to thee. These are, of course, yes. And Tianzhou gets, with pity for thy suffering, my presence becomes aware of thee. That line for him opens the door to another world, and we have to remember what he does too in his healing arts. So he, each of us, and this goes back to what I was saying last week, each of us has a particular tool, and this is a way to begin recognizing it. Go ahead. And then she also, Arya, is moved by in form and formlessness. My presence becomes thee. We can't go wrong here, Hawk Lady says, can we? No. If you hold yourself in presence and you allow this to wash over you, you can't go wrong here. And Ad Lucium also is quite attracted to. She can see as a tool this idea, and in ignorance, my presence serves thee. And both Pathworld and Mark Roche echo that. So Silverdale is reminding us of the octaves and how that plays directly into this and the formation of how this is actually written. And next week, not next week probably, but soon we're going to be getting into chapter 12 and we'll be working directly with the concept of octaves and how that energetic can help us as well. Is Simon on, by the way? No, he's still traveling. Okay. Silverdale is the only one on the phone. If anybody else would like to jump on, it would be, it's very helpful, by the way, if that's possible for you. Correct. Concurs. So we're not obviously following the flow of the chapter, okay? We're taking it in a different direction. What I want to do now is I want to spend the next few minutes, in a sense, going over each line, okay? And I'm going to need your help and anybody who's on the phone that can pitch in would be very nice as well. So let's look at that first line, which I'm moved by every time I read it. Look how it begins, though. It begins with a huge step. And why don't you read it for us, Ivan? The first line.
In motion, bowing, my presence comes to thee.
So we're talking about inner work here. We can visualize that in a sense in an externality
mm-hmm.
and how that works. But think of that, what that means, in motion bowing, my presence comes to thee. So I move toward thee. I move toward thee. But I begin with a bowing, a bow. And part of what that means, and I'd love to hear from others too, but part of what that means is that I bow away the ego of the machine. I set that aside and I come to thee because I don't want the chamber to be sullied with the temporal ego that I live in so often. So I set that aside in emotion, bowing, then I may come to you.
David, I am on the line now.
Okay. Thank you, Harry.
If you need me.
Yeah. Well, pitch in whenever it's appropriate. But I'm just digging into the very heart of this contemplative prayer here. This is one contemplative prayer of many that we can form, but this is the one we're working with this evening. Okay?
Okay.
And so Mark's
David,
reminding
I would like
us,
to.
Yeah, just Mark is saying, he's reminding us that this first line that we're on right now is like a practice of karma yoga. Absolutely, Mark. Thank you. Go ahead, Harry.
I just, if I might, just read a very short thing from Michel Conge that I think is appropriate.
Yep.
He says, prayer is a pre-existing, unknown reality to which I must find a way of opening myself. Prayer cannot come from the ego. That gift, that capacity, belongs to a very special aspect of one's being. Call it the higher emotional center if you like, but know that this center has always prayed without interruption and that its ceaseless prayer is what keeps you alive.
It certainly does keep me alive. Thank you for that. We're going to bounce to the second one, Ivan.
Humbly, with heart alive, my presence awakens to thee.
Arya, you mentioned something about that. So humbly, it's like you stand up to, you read this one and you start. First, the condition is humbly. Can we approach, what does it even mean to be humble? It does not mean to be passive. But what is the humility that is offered to us in this particular phrase here, in this particular formulation of how I will express my presence? And then there's this curious line right after it. With heart alive.
I think it means that when, to me, it's when I get out of my way, when I'm not me, that's humbling of that ego, of that personality. And it allows something else to come through. My heart awakens. It's something that touches deep inside. And for me, it's getting out of the way of that. And letting it come forward. I know the feeling when my heart is open and rejoicing, and it's amazing, and it's a very different state than when I'm, you know, in the ego demanding this and that. There's no ego there.
Right. So you start off. It gives us the real clear and distinct what the starting point is. Humbly.
Mm-hmm.
With heart alive. What an offering that is. That's a proper offering to the higher, whatever that is. But that's what gift we can bring. This doesn't mean that we have frankincense, gold, or myrrh. We come with humbly, with heart alive. With clear mind, my presence comes to know thee. Interesting. I don't think anybody marked that one down as their favorite. I don't remember. And this is after, with humility, and my heart is alive, then it says, clear mind.
It makes sense, though.
Sure it does. It certainly does, because only when, as Arya points out to us, when I'm out of my own way in a certain, mm-hmm. in a life manner, when I'm out of my, then, and my heart is alive, then my certain clarity of mind can be there. I think there was a quote, I didn't print the quotes I made on the website, but there was one about this specifically. It might have been from Theophon the Recluse. That's from the Philokalia.
Right, okay.
Yeah, those guys.
The Recluse, yeah. So this, it seems to me that this is a fairly tall order. I mean, in our practice, to invoke presence in order to be present or to invoke the essential self, it will require a clear mind. You know, it requires the concentration and the emptying of all of that, what EJ calls roof brain talk and, you know, the chatter in your mind. So,
David, excuse me. Jim wrote down that he was touched by that particular line.
Excellent. Excellent. You see it?
You're looking for the quote from,
yeah,
from Theophon?
No.
Or,
I think, okay, that was just a comment. That's actually a comment from Evelyn Underhill and her great work called Mysticism. That, read it again, or copy that into the log, too. That.
David, would you like me to read a posting by Mark?
Yeah, please.
He says, for myself, this one and the next one speak to the growing realization that no matter what I think I see, the king is naked.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what I see, the king is naked. So we're beginning to see something here in these first three lines. And then this incredible phrase comes up. With pity for thy suffering. So it's not, you don't start with that. What have you done so far? You've bowed in motion. You've come with humility. You have a clear mind. And then, from that post, you say, with pity for thy suffering. Okay? And then my presence becomes aware of thee. It's like only then do your eyes have the ability to open up and see. Can you see at that point? I'm aware. Oh my gosh, yes. Now I can see.
Right, and it feels like that interval that George referred
exactly.
to. Exactly. It's the, what'd you call it, that where to get past the barrier, you know, to get over the first threshold, instead of going 1, 2, 3 and then back to 1 again. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, this is the one.
You
other,
can go to another.
Or some additional forces needed to
okay.
go on.
Well, in the first three, you're
so
collecting yourself.
Imagine for
you're
a moment that you have. Imagine for a moment that this is the first parts of this are a formula. That you do something internally called in motion bowing. You're not passive. And you begin, you bow, But then humbly, you bring forth a great power of humility with heart alive, and now you have a clear mind. And then it shifts direction, doesn't it? It says, then you see with pity for thy suffering. If you could stand in that place, what occurs then is suddenly you are in a higher position. You have created the energy that takes you to another position. All right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see that. That it's kind of a marvelous phraseology there, this with pity for thy suffering, but only after you've gone through the first parts of the labyrinth there. Only when you've gone through that can you get to a point where you can see. Before that, it's theoretical, it's in your brain, but we can get to that point. This is a formula, right? This is a formula, and we'll get into the methodology probably next week, but this is a formula. So with pity for thy suffering, my presence becomes aware of thee. And by becoming aware, it's like you start to open up to something bigger than yourself. And it's in that opening up that something occurs. And that something now begins the next little formulation of the next part of the path. Because it says, then with yearning at that point, my presence wishes to comfort thee. Now I want to do my job. Now I want to do what's in front of me. I want to do this work because you're compelled to, because you saw, you've cleansed us in a certain way such that you can be there after you've seen and become aware of the Absolute and the Godhead. You say, with yearning now my presence wishes to comfort thee. I'm in. Go ahead, Ivan.
In ignorance, my presence serves thee.
And probably only when you're in this position, and I can attest to this definitively, that when you're in that position, when you have come to this place of yearning, then you're able to do the next line, which is called, even in ignorance, I serve thee. I don't need to know the answers, but I wish to serve. Okay? In contemplation, my presence recognizes how to serve thee. And so we've been talking for the last few weeks about this idea. What is your particular gift? You know, like when Hawk Lady says in form and formlessness, that's the shaman that's willing to go into that world of form and formlessness. That's frightening. It's frightening to me. Or Arya says, with heart alive. These are keys to the particular skill sets that you bring, you know, what post do you hold? And it gets revealed in this. Because we've left the world at this point when we're doing this work. We've left the world, and even some of our friends who are departing us and going into the next world, this is where they are. This is where they are traveling in this bardo sense. And their particular traits will either be the guide that is, they will either be the guide that carries them through the bardos. My habits will carry me through. So what habits, can you form the habit of that to carry yourself through? And you know, a dear, very dear friend of ours passed away a few days ago. And what habit? We had some unusual skills. They were quite wonderful. Then So we now know, you begin to understand if you can hold to yourself and say, it's not in ego that you have this post. It's not in ego that you were given that skill set or that gift. You just have it, okay? It's just there. Finally, in mystery, my presence is a comfort to thee. This is beyond, as I've mentioned before, when Dante finally enters Paradiso, it's like all of the angels and archangels and the Godhead looks at him and they go, what are we to do with you? It's like you're too human. You're too human to even be here. So it's only when he can transform and be in mystery can you even be part of the cycle. Can you join the party? In form and formlessness, my presence then becomes thee. So I wondered when I was reading through all of this, I kept wondering, how do you keep it going? I mean, if the phrase in Thessalonians is correct, pray without ceasing, I mean, it seems ridiculous. How could you possibly do that? It just, I mean, I have to work. I mean, I have to go read the Internal Revenue Code and study it and interpret that for my clients. So during that time, I guess that's when I'm supposed to, I can just stop, right?
God be with you, David.
Really? Good luck on this one.
At that point, I guess I suspend that. So that's, it says, I think it says in the Bible, it says prayer without ceasing, unless you're doing taxes, right? Maybe not. How do we make this a prayer that is a prayer for the fourth wayers that are in the world but not of it?
I don't think you can suspend what you're doing as your job, but you have to make your job, that is your work. It becomes a part of it. It is for me. It's a struggle every day to remember that, but when I can hold that, it becomes very, everything flows and the space is very different. And I know that I'm in a very different state, a different place.
So let's dissect that a little bit. What Aria is telling us is that, first of all, she's a teacher. And what grade level are you teaching?
Upper school, upper grades, secondary.
Upper secondary?
Yes.
Like high school?
Yeah.
So I'm in those. Knows that challenge.
Be as tough as accounting.
So now you're doing your job. So what do you mean when you said something about you get into that space and then it's something happened? I don't remember. What did she say, Aria?
Well, when I'm in the classroom, it's very easy to identify with the dramas and the bureaucracy and the stress.
Okay, so let's stop there. So one way to do it is that you're doing your job and you identify with that in the external there. You
right.
Identify with the external. And if you identify with the external, we already know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so go on.
So when I have those moments when I'm feeling stressed and the kids are coming and they have their demands and they do their things, and I can reality is I can identify and follow the bureaucracy and become, you know, kind of this cog in the machine. Or I can look at it differently, and it becomes a way of, you know, holding on to my presence. And there's probably hundreds of times a day, during the day, that I tell myself to invoke presence, to invoke my presence in this moment right now, and to, you know, where am I? Where is this coming from? And to hold on to that. It changes the phrase.
You could even use a phrase, something like, humble, with heart alive, my presence comes to thee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it changes how I respond, how I act. And it changes how the kids respond and act. It's subtle at first, but I see a huge difference over time. You know, the relationship changes, the mood, the space changes.
Did I hear her right when she said that she's different, then they are different and the space is different?
One is more present, then there's presence invoked around you, isn't it?
It has a harmonic effect, and we've talked a lot about the idea of resonance, and guess what? It's true. And what we want to do in the machine, in our historical personality, is we want to blame the external for our situation. But what if you flip that? What if you just, as an experiment, flip that? What am I doing in the space now that can be different? How can I be different in this space? And I'm sitting there. I had an experience just the other night. I was on with a client, very difficult situation, in the middle of like a pretty decent fundraising, big fundraising thing with an outside investor, and something went really poorly wrong. And at first, my tendency is to react to it. And I just started going, what's going on here? And by the end of it, we found a whole other way of approaching it that worked. Okay? So it's suspending that initial reaction and going something with something like, and humbly, with heart alive, my presence comes to thee. I want to introduce one more thing, and I know we have a long way to go in this chapter, but I want to introduce something. Many years ago, and I think Mark will remember this, I don't know who else was around at the time, but many, many years ago, Silverdale will remember it, EJ worked on Bardotown. And he and Claude worked countless hours putting together models and building a physical formation of Bardotown. Took many, many hours for many people. Many of us worked on it. Then he took what's called a pinhole camera, and he took many shots of it. Probably 500 photographs of different scenes within Bardotown. Because he used miniatures, he used houses, bridges, mountains, cows, sheep, everything. He took those and he put them together in a set. And I don't know if you know about, do you know about that set, George, the set where it was actually images of Bardotown imposed over a saying that he made. And then it was like 360 cards like that. And the way I would use the cards is then they would be, with a color photograph, they'd be mounted in I don't know if you can see this, but it's mounted in like a little, this is a baseball classical baseball card holder to preserve the quality of your card, but it fits perfectly for our set. Can you see this at all?
Yes.
Yeah, we can see it.
We can see it.
Yeah, I'm not sure this one is the right one. See if, bring that up. So, hold it up on the top. And just hold it fairly close. Can you see? There you go. Okay, can you read that? Can you read the phrase on it? Can you read what it says, anybody?
Yes.
Wow. You just bit the big one and already, oops, there it's gone.
He's bringing it up again.
And already you've located the industrial section. I can't read it.
The industrial section of the Opera V.
The Opera V.
The afterlife. Okay, thank you.
Yes, I don't read French.
And so there's 360 of these. So before the class started, I handed a card out to everybody here. And Ivan, since you're there, he just remembers he has one. What does yours say, and what is your response to it?
Okay. Well, I have a picture of several apartment buildings in an apartment block in Bardotown here. It says, now, if we can only manage to remain aloft, we won't have to go through any more horrible stuff. And that sounds like the perfect card for me. That's the story. To me, with this, just looking at this card, I mean, and thinking of Bardotown, it suggests to me, maintaining a certain state in order to pass through voyage, and with the what you call the diorama, with the simulation that EJ created, it actually corresponds to astral travel. In other words, to be able to float over Bardotown and see it as a, what would you call it? To be a voyager, to see it as a voyager from above, rather than be sucked down into identification with it, that's the ticket. And in a sense, when I'm feeling a little bit present, this is what I say every morning when I get up in the morning.
So that was arbitrarily handed to Ivan.
Yeah.
I just had a bunch in my hand. I handed them around the room. That's the one he got. Mm-hmm. It's to be in the world but not of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Dan, did you have read your card.
Not pretty.
Or never having remained aloft before, there's no right to expect anything different just because it's now.
Oh boy. That's a hot one. I'm going to speak to this. I'm going to give him the mic again.
Are we all now in mystery, David?
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe we're
yes. Exactly right. And that's the point of it.
I do have this constant hope every day that something is going to be different. It's true.
Right.
So
these are like good fortune telling cards.
So, but the and then Janet, did you have one?
Well,
you're not in front of them.
Well, you should get on mic.
Here.
You should get on mic, Jen.
Pull it back.
Yeah, okay.
No, not up and back.
Okay, here.
Okay,
so I was hoping
maybe
you
read it.
Can read it, because I...
You can't read it at all?
Just barely. It's because that was easy, wasn't it? By the way...
That's the one that Jana got, and she, and no comment.
It's the wake-up call, yeah. Or the person, like, the quote that's on the back of the Laser Man's Guide is, "You're dead, what more can happen?"
Okay, hold it.
So the one that I would, that I, so here's the one that I have, and mine says, "That was easy, wasn't it?" Oh, that, well, that is the one I have.
Yeah, the same one.
It is. Let's see.
No, this is the one I've been working with all these years. So the one I have, and the one that I accidentally gave to Jana was, "That was easy, wasn't it? By the way, when all the cars and trains are always empty and never seem to move, you are..."
But you hear.
"But you hear rumbles and whistles, you're dead." So what I did, in using this sort of thing, Harry, and being staying in the mystery, is I would take this, I'd just put it in my back pocket, my purse, whatever I'm carrying at the time, and just arbitrarily during the day, I'd pull it out. I'd pull it out, and I would use it, and I'd read it, and then I'd look around. And I'd notice certain things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talk a lot about the art of dreaming, Aria, and I tell you, this is what I mean by that. This is what the dream walkers do. But they do it in their context. This is the context that I do it in. And Jana can attest to it, and others too, that when sometimes you go out, suddenly you see the tableau.
Sure.
That is presented to you.
But this card, David, wouldn't you call that a reminding factor?
But it's a reminding factor that's very unique.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because you might wind up run into that kind of emptiness, or you might wind up in, as your card said, you know, in a situation where the answer is the above, right?
To remain aloft
is the answer to that moment.
Yeah, I could use one of those. My answer to going to what Aria was saying before about teaching, in the classroom I find that I very seldom remember to be present or to invoke presence, but if I had a card like that to pull out, that would probably be quite useful because there are openings. My experience in the classroom is that I get reminded when there's something reminds me to be present, or when there's like a portal, when there's an opportunity suddenly presents itself for something different to happen in the classroom. Sometimes I get to go through it, through that portal.
So what I'm gonna, this is an example of a formulation that works for me in terms of being able to stay in the dream state when I'm in the world as we go through it. When it's done together with others, it has exponentially more power. And then next week, because we're getting to the end of this particular part of the chapter, the next week we're going to go back over the technology of the specific prayer. And we're going to go over we're going to get back into the summary of it and how the summary took place. And I'm going to suggest a potential reminding factor card that if people want it, maybe we can reinduce Marvette to do some work on it too. I mean, a card that you can carry around.
Mm-hmm. That would be very nice, David.
Yeah, but it's different than the ones that I'm talking about. The ones I'm talking about are a different form of voyaging. The ones that I'm going to propose next week are specific to this particular chapter and this particular prayer. Okay.
I think I would, next week, I would like to talk about that discussion that he has here about the idea that those, that this process is that the things always go in this order.
Yes.
That the steps, this is a set of steps, and you go through them always in this order because they build on one another.
Yeah, and we'll get into that maybe in some technical detail in 2 weeks when we start on Chapter 12, and we'll work on that in a different way, but we'll need some guidance for that, too, and maybe...
Who's doing the summary for 12?
Well, the summary for 12 is actually by Simon and Lupe, and I'm not sure if Lupe is on tonight, but we're scheduled to meet on a conference call on Sunday, and the... George, I'm gonna send you an email about that and seeing if you have any time on Sunday. Maybe you can join us briefly.
I'd love to.
So that's what I have tonight. Anything else?
You got something to read, Dan?
Yeah, a few things.
During that LRS time,
it may fall into the ignorance.
Ignorance. In ignorance. Serves the category. I believe he's referring to the Thursday evening event, which is starting tomorrow evening, right here.
I got that too, that it's, he's talking about doing readings for people. Does he expand or...
David Pathworld just said we could each take a specific line of the prayer and carry that with us each day.
That's a very, very, very good idea, and that's along the lines of what I'm going to come up with too. Great idea, Pathworld.
What is it, Dan, you're reading?
Oh.
You develop a habit of offering the results of everything you do to go towards the benefit of all beings everywhere. Right.
So Mark is saying that that's our saving grace, what Shay was saying, because our willingness to work is not necessarily associated with know-how. And that's the courage that I get from several people, including Hawk Lady, the courage to go there anyway. The courage to go there anyway. And when we have the courage to stand in the mystery and be in I don't know, when you have the courage to stand there, something moves into your direction. But we'll go over the formula more in detail next week, and we'll go over the process in the first part of the chapter next week as well, and see if that gives us a little more of a hint.
What? Yes, David, it's always easier to seek forgiveness than ask permission.
Yes, I meant IRS, not LRS. And tomorrow night at 7
o'clock... I think David was actually referring to the Internal Revenue Service.
Internal.
The Internal Revenue Service.
In... But anyway, tomorrow night at 7, I think Yamesh and Claude are going to be hosting an LRS workshop on this channel. I think it's at 7 o'clock.
Is it 7 or 7:15? Do you know, Dan?
No.
7:15. Yeah, I thought that's what Mark was referring to. But anyway,
okay.
That's what I picked up.
And thanks for coming tonight, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Same place. Take care. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you for a great class.
Good night.